If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm not as stink as you drunk I am. It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy to News Radio. I'm your TV guide, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter, producer for Decider.com, and welcome to Chapter 9 of The Quarantine Era. That's a special effect, I don't know.
Oh my god, that was so good.
That means there is no intro music, there's going to be no theme songs, there's going to be no audio clips of any sort, just pure unfiltered conversation, because I'm doing as many of these as possible, because if I don't see my friends during this time, I'm going to go crazier than I already am. I'm doing so many Instagram lives right now, which is like vapid Instagram influencer type shit, but I don't know what to do, man. I gotta do something. So this week, which is not even a week, more like this chunk of the week, because multiple episodes are coming out this week, I'm joined by returning guest Kirk D'Amato.
Hello.
And Katie Healy-Wurzburg.
I'm clapping for myself. Hurrah. I hope that clapping comes through.
It definitely did.
Hello, Kirk. Hello, Brett.
Hi.
You sound great, Brett, and you don't sound like you're losing it.
Like I'm going nuts. Hey, Kirk, what's in that glass?
Yeah, what's in that fucking glass, Kirk?
Water.
Oh, hell
fuck,
yeah,
man.
Kirk.
Still got it. Comedy King Kirk D'Amato.
Truth in comedy.
So we're quarantined in Queens.
What was that DeCoster show where like you like wouldn't speak at all? Was it a DeCoster show? Yeah.
Voice. And
oh, yes.
I had my voice and I ended up, I was like, oh, I might just be, you know, that the seventh person who doesn't do much. But I was in like the very first scene and I didn't talk. I ended up everyone.
It was like you and Pam, I think, right?
I think so, but I can't remember.
It would happen.
I mean, odds are good it was her. And then everyone in a subsequent scene, it was one silent person. And it's like, it was pretty flawless. Like it just seemed like, because people who didn't know that I was whatever incapacitated didn't realize that was why. It was just sort of a pattern we were following. Wow, thank you for remembering that. I will try to be somewhat more vocal in this podcast because
yeah, there's only three of us and just write everything down and I'll read it for you. Kirk is in Los Angeles. Quarantined
out
there.
That's how they used to say it.
Yes.
That's how everyone says it. And we're
that's how they used to say it.
Oh,
in
really?
Like the 50s.
Oh my god.
Yes. And then they had like a conversation, like the town fathers of Los Angeles were like, hey, should we stop pronouncing this Spanish name completely insane? And then they were like, yes, we should. And then they like made a proclamation and then people started, but like every once in a while on like old like newsreels and stuff, you'll hear it pronounced Los Angeles and you're like, what the fuck just happened? It's really bizarre.
And then
we're
in two of the five boroughs.
Yeah. It's so strange. I think they actually even pronounce it that way in one of the scenes in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh.
I remember like hearing that and being like, oh shit, they did it.
Attention to detail. But yeah, so we're scattered across the country, but this week we're all going to be hopping in a DeLorean. I don't know. That's basic. And traveling to December 15th, 1973. Serpico ruled the box office. The Most Beautiful Girl by Charlie Rich topped the charts. And CBS aired the MASH episode Hot Lips and Empty Arms. Katie and Kirk, you must have seen Hot Lips and Empty Arms before today. Have you?
I don't know that I have. Like, so I did actually really like watching MASH when I was a kid. Like, they reran. I was, like, of the exact age when they were rerunning it a lot. I think on like Comedy Central,
probably. Yeah,
maybe not on Comedy Central, but I don't know. I did watch it on reruns Yeah, maybe like Nick at Night, but somewhere along, like on some channels, I was regularly watching reruns. I really liked it a lot at the time. So I don't know if I saw that one, because that was the other thing with Nick at Night. You didn't always like, they would just show like a bunch of random episodes. They didn't show.
I don't know if they ever showed things never in order. Showed,
yeah, like I don't, and it which kind of made sense. They didn't have to. They were rarely were the ones they showing serialized in any way.
Unless it's I Dream of Jeannie and you're waiting for that fucking wedding. And you're like, where is the wedding? Because I remember, like, I was like, I think tonight's the night we're finally going to see the wedding. That was a distinct memory that I had.
I don't think I ever saw any of that good. I did like what I Dream of Jeannie though, because one of the characters' names was, like, Sergeant Healy or something.
Oh, yeah, Major Healy. Yeah.
That's almost my name.
Roger Healy. That's Bill Daly's character.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I don't remember seeing that episode in particular, but I did watch the show.
But you
show
watched
a lot.
It. Kirk, did you watch The MASHes?
No, this was the very first episode of MASH I've ever seen.
Damn. Yeah.
That is so wild.
Because, like, I remember it being on Nick at Night, and it never caught my attention of young Kirk, who loved old sitcoms and watched a lot of Nick at Night.
Really?
Yeah, but for some reason, MASH never got it. And I was like, that was one of the shows I was going to suggest, because I was like, I know nothing about this. So it'd be kind of interesting to go into it as a noob. And Katie, you love it, right?
Yeah, I'd always really liked it. I loved Alan Alda. I loved all of them.
I've only ever seen, because I also never watched it growing up.
Really?
And never did. And I started watching it since it's on Hulu
now.
I can't
believe there's a show that I watched that you didn't watch.
Yeah, But I
besides
do think
Designing Women, which we've already discussed.
I think that it is because it is a very so like when you're a kid, like Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie open with cartoons, and so like it's like they're very colorful, so it's like your attention's drawn in. Whereas MASH, I mean, just to jump into it, we can talk about the theme song and opening credits.
I was just going to say, that was going to be my
that is not
my,
a show
little,
that kids want to watch, I don't think.
The name of that theme song is, the title of it is, Suicide is Painless.
Yep.
And the original version has lyrics.
Oh my God.
Which are like, Suicide is, I like have a version of it with the lyrics, and the original version was written by the son of the original director of the movie.
Oh God.
Or the original screenwriter or something. Like his son wrote it as like a 13 or 14 year old. And instead of the dad being like, maybe I should get my child some help.
Therapy.
He was like, that sounds great. I'm going to use it for my hit movie.
And like, the thing is, you say that title, that is what the song sounds like. The song immediately makes me feel, I wrote like wistful. It's very just like, like it's very, it's, and then combine that with Korean War footage.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know what, I'm a freak. So like, I'm a little freak kid. And so I think that I was like, yeah, this is cool. But I thought Alan Alda was hilarious. Like vividly, I think I did have a slight crush on John Trapper. For like early on, like the curly haired sidekick dude.
I didn't
like it as much when he left. I
this
was
is a hot
like annoyed.
Show.
Yeah,
I have crushes on at least four of the men on this show.
I'm just realizing that Jamie Farr wasn't on this episode.
No, yeah, this is season two. I don't know when. The only thing that I knew about MASH for a long time was there was like a man dressing in women's clothing as an attempt to get out of the army. Was his whole gig?
Like he was always trying to be like, I'm so crazy, I need to leave. And it never worked.
Yeah, so like I don't know when he joined, but like this show had a lot of cast.
I guess it must have been, it must have been later. I would have, in my mind, I would have thought he was like an earlier edition than like mid-second season, which is what we watched. But I guess it was later. They also, I mean, it's funny because like they added a priest character.
Oh, that's he's
Padre.
So hot too. I love him.
Yep, that makes sense. He's
William
your type.
Christopher.
He was great. Radar was on the whole time. Alan Alda's character was on the whole time.
Also hot.
And like Houlihan, I think, were
hot
like
lips.
The only Yeah. We're like, maybe, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, because I didn't realize that Jamie
Radar
Farr
did leave at some point, because there's an
episode. But I think he came back.
Because there's a two-parter called Goodbye Radar that I almost did. I should have this up somewhere. But this week, I forgot this part of the script.
Oh, okay. So yeah,
this week,
everything up.
Not editing anything. I must have seen TV. I'm talking about the MASH episode Hot Lips and Empty Arms. It's the 14th episode of season 2 and was written by Emmy nominated for this episode Linda Bloodworth and Mary Kay Place. Wild. And directed by Jackie Cooper.
That's Linda Bloodworth prior to Linda Bloodworth Thomas.
No Thomas in there.
Boom. Boom.
Directed by Jackie Cooper. Wow. And here's how Hulu describes the episode. The what?
No, I noticed Jackie Cooper directed it. Jackie Cooper, best known as Uncle Fester from The Addams Family.
Wait, is that really him?
Oh.
I mean, unless it's another Jackie Cooper, but that's
or,
the
no,
famous...
Or is he Jackie Coogan?
Oh, no. Okay, edit that out.
No,
you have to edit it out.
It might be Jackie Coogan.
Yes, it is Jackie Coogan.
Well, shut my mouth.
Well, still valid.
But hey, any reference to Uncle Fester, I am here for.
I was super excited because I thought Uncle Fester directed it.
It's not far fetched. Although
would have been hilarious.
Well, he did die in 1984, so he's very much alive. Here's how Hulu describes this episode. Hot Lips gets depressed and requests a transfer, causing turmoil in the camp. Katie and Kirk, how accurate is that description?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty, that's pretty accurate. I think structurally, and I think this is something that we've talked about on this, like when I've been on the show before, is like, it's just really interesting seeing how older sitcoms structured plots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there was an A plot.
And there's nothing
and
else.
And then kind of a little bit of a B plot.
With the porn?
A little bit. Yeah, and like wanting to order more porn videos from Cuba. But that's kind of it. It's just really fascinating how it's just so different now, you know?
So like
it's rare to have less than you have two and
at least two, maybe a third,
three,
honestly,
you know?
It was written by Linda Bloodworth, who goes on to create Designing Women, and Mary Kay Place, who is more known as an actor. She won an Emmy for her roles in Mary Hartman. I think she was on Lady Dynamite as Maria Bamford's mother, is where I mostly know her from.
I need to watch that show.
She played Maria Bamford's mother. So like I did not know that they were like writing partners. I think real talk, larger talk about MASH and maybe why I never got into it is it is a very masculine show.
Yeah,
it is a very it has kind of, I mean, it's a it's not like football, but like Hawkeye and Trapper are very much like good old boys being good old boys. But it's Alan Alda. He's so sweet that you don't. You kind of, if you just look at what the things he does, like in this episode, Houlihan lists like all of the sexual assault,
completely unacceptable things that they do as like funny japes.
Yeah,
I think it's hard to like judge the whole show from one like episode.
Oh, yeah.
In the sense, like, it's hard to judge the characters in context.
There is a depth to
I
these
feel
characters.
Like, yeah, there is like a real like a huge depth, and that like you see in like overall how they're like kind of like, especially early in the earlier seasons with Trapper and with Hawkeye, what that relationship is them like acting out to deal with it. Like they're like, they make jokes about everything. They're very sarcastic. They have like their whole like martinis still. And like, it's like all of these things that they do in order to like deal with like the horrors that they're trying to like deal with and like process emotionally.
Which I think is the other reason why I never watched this show, is because the setting is depressing.
Yeah.
I honestly, now you guys are talking about it, I'm like, I don't know why I watched the show so much, but I really liked it. And I genuinely enjoyed it. And I was laughing like at several moments. And even though like, I was like, God, they're fucking terrible. Like, those are objectively unacceptable ways to behave. But it is also interesting because this is, like, about... It's like Happy Days, you know, in that sense that it's like this show from the 70s about a situation in the 50s.
Yeah.
So they're like they're using this setting to talk about like modern like things that at the moment they were dealing with. So like you see that kind of like this episode is them sort of like trying to talk about quote unquote women's lib in the context of like this like woman nurse in the 50s. You know what I mean? And
being
like,
written by two female writers in the 70s. Yeah. And like, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
There's another episode that I was considering doing that was like the log line. It was a later season episode was like Hawkeye has like reconsiders his treatment of women. And it was like season episode. And I was like, oh, my God, that one sounds like a deep one to get into. But like that lets you know that like there was awareness to the characters to like allow them to like grow and do some internal checking and growth that other lesser shows would never give a fuck about.
And I think maybe that's one of the other reasons that I did really like the show is like that it like there's a one of the characters like a long running character who you're very attached to like gets transferred away and then dies, and it's devastating. Like, I remember watching this episode of a sitcom from the 70s in, like, the late 90s whenever I watched it. I'm just being horrified and so sad and, like, definitely crying in front of, like, the TV in the basement.
Ugh.
Like, when I was secretly watching TV when I wasn't supposed to be. And so, like, it very often did those things. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's... It also went on for such a long time. Like, I think it ran
11 seasons.
Yeah, 11 or 12 seasons.
11 seasons, like, 256 episodes.
Oh, my God. So they did. Like, those characters changed. Even as, like, you know, new characters joined, I think those characters also grew and changed. I did wish a little bit that we'd done a later one, because as much as Frank Skinner is just, like, an amazing villain, the guy who replaced him, and I'm blanking on his name, but that actor who he recently passed away.
Oh, David Ogden Stiers is.
Yes, yeah. I love him.
I love David Ogden Stiers. Gay hero, very so handsome. That's
just the best. In one of the best episodes of Star Trek ever, a classic with Majel Barrett. But yeah, anyway. I really like it still.
The episode opens with Radar doing his like mail rounds and like doing gags and stuff. Kirk, what did you like about Radar? Did you like Radar O'Reilly as a character?
Yes, he was my favorite character of the ones that I introduced in this. You know, in one episode, I'm like, okay, get me a flash image of each character. I liked Radar the most because two things I had noticed about him. One, he sounded a lot like Les Nessman from WKRP.
Okay, yeah.
Who I think was the voice, or the guy who voiced Piglet. He has, like, such a soft voice.
Oh, no, yeah. That was John Fiedler, who was on Bob Newhart's show. Yeah.
Yes, that guy, like, he had a character like that, and I thought that's, like, a nice change from, like, these cool, smarmy guys who are just gonna be blah, 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 blah. And he was noticeably shorter than Colonel Potter. And I love that. Like, I thought, like, oh, it's nice to just see, like, a variety. Like, instead of, you know, you have to hit.
He's my height.
6'1".
He's 5'6". Yes.
Yeah. Like, that's. Yeah. I thought, like, oh, this character is great immediately.
You guys
like,
know why he was named Radar?
Because of his eye? No, I don't know.
Do you know why, Brett?
No, I don't think I...
Okay, so Radar is his nickname, and it's because... And you see this character game, like, several times in this episode, and it's because he has, like, this preternatural ability to, like, know when things are going to happen. So, like, almost always, he'll be like, helicopter's coming, and, like, no one sees anything, and then, like, 2 minutes later, they have an alarm that the helicopters are coming. So he, like, kind of... So, like, when he's, like, saying the same things as Colonel Potter is saying, and, like, he's already done the stuff, and he, like, comes with the, like, the transfer papers, and it's, like, it's not just because he's, like, a really great assistant, it's, like, that was his, like, character game. So, he was both the innocent, because he's, Yeah, his he's like the kind of archetypal innocent of the show.
Yeah.
So there's lots of plot lines that deal with them, trying to, protect him, but then also introduce him to be like. So yeah, it's he's a great character. I love Radar.
He's handing out.
Talk about.
All right. I was gonna say
go ahead.
All right, he's handing out all the mail. He hands Larry Linville, who plays Frank Burns. I'm looking at the MASH character page on Wikipedia. It's everything straight. He hands him mail, and isn't the Hawkeye makes a joke of oh, is your neighborhood finally basically desegregated?
Right.
What was that? What was the word they used? Open or?
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Restricted.
Is it still restricted? And he's of course not. Catholics live across the street.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's one
okay,
Catholic.
So this guy
in,
sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He is the ultimate kind of archetypal villain. He's cowardly and smarmy.
Also
and,
thirsty as
shitty.
Fuck.
Yeah. Oh,
all
yeah,
he wants
well,
is
thing.
Just he is just all up in Hot Lips. He and
Houlihan are fucking the whole time.
Yeah.
During until he leaves.
And he's married. We find
yeah.
Because
oh, yeah.
they say is that letter you're writing a letter to your wife? And it's which I don't know. Again, I'm not that familiar with MASH. I was he's cheating on with Hot Lips.
Oh yeah.
And
the whole time.
He's just also not, he doesn't come across as that smart in this episode either. He's just
he's also a bad doctor. Yeah. He's that was his other thing. He sucks on every level. He has almost no redeeming qualities.
Except apparently really. His kissing.
There's episodes where he some Korean refugees will show up and he'll be no, we can't protect them. He's racist. He just sucks at every turn. And I'm genuinely trying to remember a moment in which he is not just
awful,
the worst. But I can't think of any.
We get a moment when Radar goes in to hand McLean Stevenson, who I know mostly from Match Game, Henry Blake. He took over the Richard Dawson seat when Richard Dawson went to go to Family Feud. So McLean Stevenson was that on Richard. So that's how I know him. He goes in to deliver a delivery from the Tabasco Film Company in Havana, Cuba.
To the Colonel. Oh, sorry. I've got sirens. Can you guys hear that?
Oh, yeah. Hey, welcome. Welcome to Manhattan.
Yeah.
I don't have any of those out here. Although, actually, an EMT.
I actually have very few. Oh, shit. I'm sorry.
There's always an ambulance or something just parked in the TD Bank parking lot or outside my window. What's your ambulance situation like in LA, Kirk?
Every now and then you hear them. I live on an off street that's near Beverly Boulevard. I don't run into them terribly often, but every now and then you hear it.
Is that depressing to
Beverly
talk about?
Beverly Boulevard, so fancy.
I
genuinely have no idea.
The Price is Right studios and where they do James Corden.
Oh, he's your neighbor.
Yeah.
Throw yourself in front of that carpool.
So excited to hear that.
We see Lieutenant Colonel Henry Blake. I'm just going to read their entire titles. He gets out the film and he starts shoving it through the microscope to look at it. And is getting off.
How else are you going to look at it?
Solid
you don't
want
to set up your whole, eight millimeter thingamajiggy.
But they have a projector because we see that later. Because they're actually watching all the porn together, disturbs me.
I want to be clear. I think this is probably 50s porn. So this is probably slightly sexy movies.
Okay.
Not full on penetrative pornography.
Yeah. He did say, someone said
just
that.
Just FYI.
They recognize one of the characters, but they might be joking. But they said she looks better in balloons than in her uniform. So it might be a strip film, is what I had imagined.
Yeah.
I think a stag thing. Bachelor party.
Burlesque.
Yeah. Okay. Totally.
Then it's not. This is not 70s fucking porn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is slightly more innocent.
But it still does strike me as odd because it's kind of a trope in a lot of entertainment that the boys will be smoking cigars and watching a stag film.
Yeah.
And I've never even heard of something like that in real life.
You never kicked back with the dudes and watched Full Penetration?
No, never.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, Jesus. Like,
I will say, so this is awful.
For me.
In college, we would, in college, me and my friends,
oh, Jesus.
Me and
oh,
my
Jesus.
Friends would watch pornography, ironically.
No, you weren't.
As, well,
you're
I mean,
just
that's how we all.
Porn well, with not, your
like,
friends.
We weren't like. Well, it was like that one time we all went over to Dave Bloodband's house and watched adult movies on his mom's cable after practice one day. This was like 13 years ago.
Sort of movies.
So I'm going to guess this was Iron Ruckus, a team that was almost all men.
Yeah, I think, I can't remember. Yeah. I think it was like us and Fat Penguin all went over there, which is another improv team. Anyway, so... After we get the whole mail thing, he gives Hot Lips a piece of mail that she's, like, distraught by. We find out a line in Hot Sec.
And she seems really upset that there's only one. Which is, like, a weird, like, thing, because that doesn't come up later.
Yeah. So, all
I mean,
of
it was a funny joke, but, yeah, it was weird.
All of the operating room scenes, first of all, are shot through, like, a full-on Barbara Walters Drag Race Season 1 heavy filter.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything gets very fuzzy.
I noticed that some of her close-ups were also filtered like that.
Demands.
So, which was kind of surprising to me because it's not like because generally that happens, especially at that time, was like something that they would like older actresses would insist on.
Yeah.
Because then you wouldn't see like they would literally put Vaseline.
Yeah,
on
the wrinkles. Like the.
So yeah, because then it's soft light. But yeah, I think the bigger thing about the operation scenes is like there's no laugh track.
Yeah, I noted like that was very. So yeah, Kirk, you brought up like you asked like was this with or without laugh track?
Right,
because there are multiple
I know that
versions.
Sometimes or the UK version has no laugh. Mm-hmm.
What did you think? What did we all think of the laugh track in general?
I don't like it.
I don't like it.
I think it'd be,
I honestly didn't mind it.
But you're used to it, also.
I think that's part of it. And I was like watching it. And so it's like the first, does that annoy me? And I don't think it does. Like, I mean, I can't think of any sitcom that I currently watch that has a laugh track. So it like, to, you know what I mean? I was just kind of like expecting it to be more jarring, but like, and I honestly haven't watched an episode of MASH since probably the year 2000, if not before.
Yeah.
So it's not like this. I'm regularly watching it and used to it in that context. I didn't really mind it. I didn't feel like it was like, it didn't sound like over the top. You know what I mean? I don't have a problem with laugh tracks in general.
No, yeah.
Like, even though I don't watch any shows that have them right now, because I don't watch any like three camera shows, but I don't, as a concept, I don't hate them the way I think a lot of like comedians are. Like,
yeah. I love laugh tracks, and I've gone on the record. I mean, of course I have this podcast, so of course I love them. I only find them weird when it's a show that, you know, was not shot in front of a audience,
which is when
I notice it. So like Mary Tyler Moore, Dick Van Dyke, Bob Newhart show, Cheers, like those are shot in front of an audience and it feels like there is energy that you can't see it because you can't see auras, man. but you can feel the performers like really.
20 was the other day, Brett.
Yeah, vibing off of the live feeds, but watching like Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie and like and MASH, which is not in the same league at all.
Definitely not in the.
It does feel
a little. Studio. Yeah.
I don't know. What's your take on laugh tracks, Kirk?
I love them. I do love them. I love a good canned laughter. It just felt a little odd to me because this show had such a single camera feel, I guess.
Yeah.
And I did feel like a lot of the joke, like the humor is, it's a bit dry at times and it's a bit subtle. And the laugh track does not suit the jokes to me living in the year 2020. I'm sure in 1973, it was like, it was totally normal and good.
Yeah.
But I would have.
Yeah,
liked-
I think they wouldn't have been able to get away with it for an American audience.
Yeah,
without having
which is
one.
Why. Yeah.
And they have, that's the other thing that's, I think, interesting about the UK one is that they weren't airing, as far as I understand it, when I've like read about it, they weren't airing MASH at the same time. Like it was only like in like they aired MASH in the UK much later.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like in like the 80s and like probably just the 80s. So I think it was like not the same era. You know what I mean? And it wasn't like they were just like shipping it directly there. It was like much later they decided to like air, like show it there.
They aired them in six episode seasons. So they just finished up MASH last year.
Wow.
Heyo, because the UK has shorter seasons.
Every episode was 3 hours long.
So Hot Lips is like tearing up wrecking shop in the OR. She's on everyone's ass and she's like angry.
She's so mad about that letter.
We find out that the letter comes from a woman that she was enlisted with, like back, I guess, at the beginning of the wartime, who is since.
Was it that she was enlisted with her or she went to nursing school with her?
Or nursing school. Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, I guess it was nursing school. But she says, like, they came up together and then, like, basically this woman married the doctor that Hot Lips, like, turned down and now just got, like, an update on her life with, like, children, a good car, a dope house. And Hot Lips is like, you know, hashtag. This could be us, but I play in, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Hashtag their house. It didn't cost $40,000. It cost $45,000, which is not actually like that's an expensive house. I think my grandparents built their house in a suburb of Boston in like 1950. For like $20,000. Actually, it might have been like $15,000.
It's a nice house.
Like a whole 3 or 4 bedroom house. So yeah.
So yeah, she's like rightfully just like livid. As someone that just met Hot Lips in this context,
rightly. Well, I don't think is like she was like, oh, I'm jealous, and I wish that was me, and then like goes on a tear, like taking it out on other people. Like, oh, that's just being a dick.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. No, you know, like,
she's living in this friggin' war.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things about both Hot Lips and Frank Skinner's characters is that both of them are always portrayed as being very callous about the war. You don't really hardly ever see them emotionally deal with like this stuff. Like, they're both like whatever, like they don't, like they're very cold about that stuff. And so like I think it is a fair thing to raise that like maybe this is her just being like, I don't want to fucking be here anymore. But to give context for that, for both of those characters, like that was never really part of their thing. And that's one of the other reasons, because like Hot Lips is, she's less of a villain than Frank, but is also like kind of cast as like the other main antagonist in the show.
Which I never that surprises me because I know Loretta Swit from, again, Match Game, and just like being Loretta Swit. And I was like, oh, she must have been like the fun female lead on MASH. And then when you watch MASH, it's like, oh, no, they don't like it's kind of also a weird thing that like the only woman on your show you make.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The villain, but like whatever, it's fine.
she was the B word for sure. Yeah. They had female characters, but they were did not have nearly the same like screen time or focus.
What was your take on Hot Lips, Kirk, as this being your first introduction to the legendary Hot Lips?
It was not what I expected.
But
you
knew the name, the character name, yes. Right? Because that's like improv scenes all the time. Like, yes. It's just
I'm familiar with a character named Hot Lips Houlihan. So I assumed she would have, like, I was very surprised. And on everything, whatever I had in my mind was not what was portrayed. I liked her. I felt for her. And I feel like I get, you know, just it's a sign of the times that they're basically going to have to make her like that, or she's going to have to be like some sexy bimbo who laughs at Alan Alda's jokes. Like, those are probably the two options of like a nurse in a sitcom of those times. And I was like, ugh. And I really sympathized with her because I was like, yeah, these guys really suck.
She's totally right.
Yeah.
She's not wrong.
Even the guy that she is hooking up with, when she like reads the riot act of like, here's why I want to transfer. I hate all of these people. And then his way of comforting her is he says, hey, only the people that don't know you don't give you respect. Or like, only the people that know you don't give you respect. And it's like, oh my, that's not comforting. I
mean, it was like a joke, but it was also like, he sucks.
So she dumps his ass.
And I think that is, she doesn't. They're still fucked.
Well, she dumps his ass for the next 15 minutes, I guess.
Yeah, for like 15 minutes. And that's, I honestly think that's one of the other like things that counts against her character is that she, like, because she and Frank are like a unit, like then Trapper and Hawkeye, like, you know, Hotlips was also not her nickname. Like, they gave her that nickname. She doesn't like it. She gets mad often when they call her that, which I think is another reason, like, why the cultural connotations of her are very different. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow, yeah.
Like, you hear Hotlips Houlihan, you're like, oh, she's probably, like a Jessica Rabbit kind of character. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, and she's not that at all. She's, like, almost an archetypal, like, humorless, like, women's libber. You know, which is maybe like a slightly early concept for when this was written, but it's that definitely that kind of like shrill, unfunny, not interested in like doing
carousing.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. No carousing. and I do think that that like minimizes a bit when Frank Skinner's character leaves and David Ogden Stier's character replaces him. Because he's like, it's a very different vibe, and they don't obviously fuck. No. Those two characters don't.
Oh, I would have assumed they would. And
I think that
character
very vaguely, he's a very like proper, like, like rich, like very upper class rich doctor kind of type. He's a little bit older than the rest of them, like in the context of the show. I don't think in reality he was actually that much older, but he's definitely a bit reserved. And I know I'm vaguely remembering this, but when his character joins, I believe like Houlihan is like, ooh, like the new, and he's like rich. I can't wait. He's going to be my new guy. And I think cause he's also like a bachelor, she's like, great. And then he's just like, ew. His character is not really coded as that, as I recall, but it's also definitely possible.
Yeah, when I get to season 6, I will be reading every single scene.
Yeah, well, let me know what you think, because it's been a long time since I've seen it.
She finally gets in to see McLean Stevenson, a.k.a. Blake, Henry Blake, Lieutenant Colonel Blake. I just want to call them all by their actor names, because those are the names I know. She finally gets in to see, Loretta Swit finally goes to see McLean Stevenson after Gary Berghoff tries to stop her, because he's like, he's watching some training videos. He's watching porn.
There's bodies everywhere.
He's watching porn with Alan Alda and Wayne Rogers. That's the one name I didn't know. This is where she calls the two of them a bunch of shower tent peekers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa.
It's like you do it one time and everybody in life will do that.
Yeah, geez.
Like, oh, gross. Unacceptable, guys.
Yeah, don't go peeking in showers, especially shower tents. So basically she says, like, I want to quit. And they're like, okay, well, we'll transfer you, but, like, we'll keep it secret just in case you change your mind. And then immediately over the intercom, is this where we see kind of Radar's game come into play? Because he's already announced it, like, over the speaker of, like, this is Major Houlihan's last night or whatever. She's a major? Yeah, this is Major Houlihan's last night. We'll be having champagne and the whatever, like a party.
Yeah,
I enjoyed that joke. I thought that was a good, solid joke.
Yeah,
there with Radar. Like, I love a character like that can just cause so much chaos, so unintentionally.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's your whole brand. Although
it's cute. I loved Radar immediately.
He had his own show, you know.
He's a great character.
He got a spinoff.
Oh, really?
Well. He got.
Didn't last very long.
Yeah, I think it only lasted the one episode. I think it lasted a pilot, and it was called Walter, but it was spelled like MASH with the asterisks.
Okay.
And it was. The episode relates the adventures of Corporal Walter Radar O'Reilly after he returns home from the Korean War. He is no longer calling himself Radar and has moved away from Iowa after he sent his mother to live with his aunt, settling in St. Louis, Missouri. By the beginning of the series, he's become a police officer. Though his character is still as in the original series. That's weird. It did not go to series. But also Trapper John got his own show, and that lasted 7 fucking seasons.
Trapper John MD, which I remember as a child.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Vaguely.
Oh my God, I forgot that happened.
I don't know anything about it. I thought it was a hour-long drama as a kid. I was like, oh, this is a serious show, probably because it had a connection to MASH. But
it was a medical drama. It was an hour-long drama.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, I'm just, yeah.
That's very odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so strange. I literally, the only other thing I've seen that actor in was he played like a scummy like private eye on Murder, She Wrote every once in a while. And whenever he'd show up, he'd be like, it's Chopper. So I didn't realize that was the same character.
Yeah,
that's
Trapper John
wild.
ND focuses on Dr. Trapper, played 28 years later after the Korean War. So it was played in modern time in the 80s, and it was played by an older actor.
A different actor.
So it's the same canon, but like it is set. Now, it's not set in the 50s. It's set in modern time. So it's an older actor. Yeah, an older actor is playing the same character.
Wow.
Yikes. Oh, okay. So fuck that then.
That's so wild, right?
you can't have Trapper. You can't have Trapper without that actor.
But he played him for 151 episodes. So he. Yeah. I think they know that. Where did I just see that?
No, like he, that.
Roberts played the character more than twice as long. He played the character more than twice as long as the other guy. So
Well,
that guy sucks.
Yeah.
And the other Trapper is not as better.
Then there was Aftermath, which was lasted two seasons.
It's funny. I was trying to remember. Do you remember that show? I think it must have been on Nickelodeon. I don't know what channel it was on, but it was on. It was about. They would do like. Kind of like Behind the Music, but for TV shows. And I vividly remember watching
like
the one for
MASH. Story?
No, it wasn't like each other. It was like literally like you just, you know, go through like the history of the show. But it was, I remember the one where like the finale for MASH got preempted by, what was supposed to be the finale for MASH got preempted by like some crazy news story. It might have been the, like when the, Americans were kidnapped and like Jimmy Carter with all that stuff so like it was like this whole thing where like they were all like so upset about not having the opportunity to like actually say goodbye to these characters after it kind of limped along for the last season.
There's so many things. So basically after this they basically Alan Alda and Trapper Hawkeye and Trapper come. They go to Hot Lips's room. They brought champagne. They like actually wave a literal white flag. Her tent, not her room. God, they're all in tent life. And they're trying to be like, they're like trying to be friendly, like cordial. But she's still like, hey, here's all the garbage shit you guys have done to me and all the women, including like putting microphones in their sleeping bags.
That was insane. I was like, what does that even mean?
Yeah,
like, what are you doing?
It is fun knowing this was written by two women, so this is also probably them making fun of the kind of dumb shit that men do by making it even dumber than it even would be, which is funny.
It's probably about as dumb as it was.
Yeah.
But I think that's the other thing, too, is, like, she never, like, softens towards them, and probably rightfully. But I also do think that they were going, like, you know, I think it's still, like, they still are connected in that way where they're, like, a team. Like, even though she, like, outside of the tent, they don't like each other. Outside of the surgical tent, they don't like each other. But in that tent, they're still, like, a team to rely on one another to, like, save lives. So I don't think that they were going to be like, eh, fuck you, drink some shitty stuff. Because she also, like, never would drink their, like the still stuff. Like, the stuff
so
that they would,
that is the main thing of this whole episode. Is like, they're like, oh, she's drinking.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even champagne. It was, like, gin that they had still. I thought that was, I liked that. I thought, like.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, like I thought maybe they try to carbonate wine, and I was like,
"Well, that was the joke." Was like, "I have bad news. Like that scotch was rye. That's fine. I just drank champagne. That was gin." Like,
yeah.
I think it's honestly actually vodka too in the canon of the show. But maybe they tried to make gin. The what?
They drink martinis, right?
Yeah, or they're always in the martini glasses because I think that was all they had. Do you just get hand delivered water?
Yeah,
from
Pop
Street. Wow, that was incredible.
Well.
In New York, they don't even like they just like drop it in front of our doors now.
Chuck the
they
water
don't even
at you.
Hand it to you.
This is a part I really liked when we watch McLean Stevenson, Henry Blake dictating to Radar like another porn order, and I really liked that afterwards. Radar asked for it. Do you think they have any Flash Gordon? Because he was super into Flash Gordon cereals. I thought that was great. That's when I was like, yeah, Radar is my guy. Mm-hmm. Me and Radar.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Radar could hang. If I was in Korea with Radar, I would have an hopeless crush on him. Totally one-sided. It would be bad for everyone. It would endanger lives.
I don't think it would be one-sided necessarily. I think he would just be very clueless, and it would take you 7 seasons to make him understand that.
He would be the Daphne to my Niles.
Yeah. Or actually, you could, both of you, you'd be in a relationship, and then you'd just constantly been like, oh, you're such a good friend, and you'd be like, oh, we just had sex. Yeah, I guess we're really good friends.
This is when Hot Lips and the Colonel start drinking. They're like going, you know, is he drinking too? She's the one that's like really just like pouring, like,
I think he does have a drink.
He drinks too.
But he's not smashed like she's getting.
No, because she's also been drinking beforehand.
Yeah.
And she doesn't drink, whereas like Trapper and like his character, along with Hawkeye and Trapper, like they're big drinkers. So like he has a fucking liquor cabinet in his office. You weren't supposed to do that in the army, you guys.
Oh, especially
they weren't supposed to be drinking at all. Yeah.
Because
they're not supposed to drink even at all. Right. So
she gets drunk, and then they get the alert that like an emergency, a big emergency is coming. Marines have been like hurt. Some Marines have been hurt. I said that really stupidly. War is scary.
Woo. They've been hurt. Oh, no.
Kirk, how good would you be into army?
Terrible. Terrible. Like, I was so, I mean, especially in this time, watching this, like, here now.
These are my awards, mother, from army. Sorry.
That is the vibe.
But, like, they're doing medical work. It was so, like, I don't know, it kind of caught my heart in my chest to watch. Like, my dad was actually a medical, was a medic in Vietnam. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so there is some connection there for it. I would not want to be in the army. It seems like a difficult, miserable experience, especially back then. Like, I'm not cut out for any of that.
Jesus Christ. You know? I'm barely cut out for what we are literally doing right now, which is not leaving our apartments. And that is driving me crazy. And so I can't imagine if it was like this, except the whole thing is you can't go home and there's bombs and guns. Mm-hmm. And then also unchecked testosterone, which makes me uncomfortable.
My like kind of godfather was he worked on a submarine in the Navy, and was a chef on the, and he talked about life on the submarines, which is a bit similar to this, except they would give them the best food because living on a submarine sucked a lot, because you're just down there for months at a time.
Oh,
and so they would get like super high quality food to make up for it. And I was thinking, oh, this must be what that was like. I mean, this is a palace compared to a submarine. Plus, I'm like not dealing with 16 other people all the time, or however many.
Yeah. Did they have to hot bunk on the submarine he was on?
I don't know. I don't know if it was. I would probably expect yes.
That's like literally, I read about that and I was like, oh, that's my nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even, like, you have so little personal space or privacy.
You have to
that
sleep
you don't
with someone
even
else?
Have your own bed.
Oh my God.
So hot bunking means like
head to toe, or
there's no, that would be worse. So basically they have enough beds only for each person gets a bed for 8 hours.
Oh.
So it's based on shifts. So like you have a bunk for 8 hours, and once that 8 hours ends, you're off. You have to be out of the bunk because someone else sleeps. So it's like three shifts.
I mean,
so it's like 3 8-hour shifts for when you sleep, connected to like when you're on duty. And just like, no.
No, thank
my
you.
Bed.
Yeah,
I don't want to fucking sleep in someone else's fart sheets.
Oh.
Like, oh, Jesus. So it was called hot bugging because the bed would still be hot from the last person who was sleeping in it.
So
that would be worse than what we're doing now.
Yeah, we're fine.
Right?
Yeah.
So basically, in order to get her sobered up in time for the Marines that are coming, they grab her, they take her to a shower, and Alan Alda and Trapper, Hawkeye and Trapper, basically they shower her. And honestly, it's wild that at this point I was like, oh, kudos for not taking off her clothes.
Yeah, and I think that's the other moment in like because you see like the colonel just like, take care of this drunk lady, you know, like, and in a context aside from like the time when this was made, like you could see that devolving into a horrible situation so easily, which I think is one of the reasons from our modern perspective, we're watching it like, what?
Oh my God. Okay. And then it's like, it's like, okay, like, no, she's in the shower. She's still wearing her clothes. They're literally just trying to get her sobered up. We are fine. It's all good.
They are like, they are actually good people.
Yeah.
Even though they're also jerks.
Well, yeah, I mean, how much of it is gross, also, well, you know, a lot of it could also just be like the macho posturing of like, we have to like do this as a coping mechanism, and like, how much it's sexual assault are we actually like, doing?
God.
So it's interesting.
This is like, a good show.
What you say.
I'm sorry.
A good show. So I want to go back to one thing that you mentioned a few minutes ago, which was like the unchecked testosterone.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, really interesting. MASH was a very interesting show for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons, I think, especially the way Alan Alda played that character, mm-hmm. was that it was not a particularly swaggery, like, testosterone,
he's
male,
great.
Masculine. Like, his whole thing was, like, his character wasn't like that. And, like, even though his defense mechanism was, like...
He's a Han Solo-y kind of type. He'd be, like, Han Solo's big brother.
I think that's definitely that, like, his defense mechanism is, like, sarcasm and, like, humor and making jokes and, like, but you do genuinely see his character, mm-hmm. like, deal with, like, emotionally devastating things.
Really good.
And, like, and I think that's, like, as much as, I don't know, I think Alan Alda didn't love being, like, a famous actor in a lot of ways, but, like, he was fucking magic in that role.
Oh, God,
and,
yeah.
like, I think is... a huge percentage of the reason that the show lasted as long as it did and why it was as huge of a hit as it was, because that character was like insane. Like, just like to see that character on TV was very different, you know, in the way he played him and the way like the humanity he brought to a character that in a lesser actor would just be a slime ball, you know?
Yeah. Because you do like him a lot. I like him.
Yeah.
I don't know, like Trapper is a little bit.
Too.
Yeah. Oh, those eyes. Ooh, lordy.
I don't know why I had such a crush on that actor, but I did on Trapper.
So, Gary Berghoff is number one hottie. Alan Alda is number two hottie.
No.
William Christopher is number two hottie. Alan Alda would be three.
Who's William Christopher?
Radar? Father Mulcahy, who's not in this episode.
Oh, Padre. Padre. Later.
I also think Larry Linville is handsome. The lipless wonder.
Hi, Brett.
Yeah, we're fine. We're having a good time.
Hi, Brett. Nice to meet you.
This is the part where basically, like, how does Hot Lips like bring this up when she's drunkenly talking to the two of them, where she says like he's not good at a lot of things, but Frank Burns is a lipless wonder. Like, that's how she describes him kissing. So it's like, hey, that's his one.
I think that might be maybe not kissing.
Oh.
Whoa.
Maybe that's what she means.
That's a very risque joke.
There were several like risque jokes like throughout that I was kind of surprised watching it now, because when I watched it before I was a child. I think I maybe picked up on more of those this time. I'm gonna honestly probably start watching MASH again. Now that this is like
all on Hulu.
Pushed me to, and they're on Hulu. P.S. This is not off topic, and I shouldn't even say this because this is like a current sitcom. Watch the first few episodes of Barry. Boy, that show is so good.
I need to watch it.
It's on Hulu now because
it has
like
Henry Winkler in it.
HBO.
So it is.
It is great. Yeah, Henry Winkler connected.
Yep.
Happy Days. Show about the 50s, made in the 70s.
See, boom.
It's great, guys. It's great.
I need to get into it. So yeah, she thanks Hawkeye for, you know, giving her a B1 shot. They like do OR stuff, like everything. Basically the episode ends. She kind of arbitrarily decides like she's actually not gonna go anywhere.
But they never say that, do they?
I think because like it hadn't actually been processed, right? She just filled out the paperwork.
Yes. Yeah, he had
and like started packing, and this was very much like you know when your mom gets mad that like nobody is like doing their chores and is like, well, that's it, no television for a month and I'm giving away all of your toys, mm-hmm. and just starts like dramatically packing everything just to be like, fucking clean the kitchen. She's not actually going to like give away your toys. That it felt like that kind of move to me. It's also possible that like she's done this before. Cause I think that does become like a running joke with her where she's like, this is it. This is finally it. I'm so sick of it. They've gone too far this time. How dare you? When the second, colonel comes in, who's the guy, one of the actors from Dragnet, the older guy. Yeah. Who I think is actually Colonel Potter. You mentioned that before, but I think that was his character's name.
Yeah.
He's also great. Cause he comes in and he's like a lot more like old school army, like, rah, rah. And she's like, so excited. She's like, this is going to be great. Blah, blah, blah. And then he turns out to like, not be all that different. Like he's different from the last colonel, but like not as official army as like she was looking forward to him being.
Yeah, and that's basically the end of the episode. The last shot is all the gang in like the mess hall cutting up and like throwing shit, and then Colonel Blake is just like, it's just nice to have all my children back together again, and it's like,
good. Yeah,
we're good,
because like Hot Lips is like making Frank jealous by like Trapper is like, Hot Lips is hungover, and like, and they're all like goading Frank by talking about like the special night they had.
Yeah.
And like Hot Lips is not like denying it either. She's like, just to make Frank go crazy. Cause he's also like very jealous for being like a shithead who's still married and cheating on his wife.
Yeah, God, he's awful.
And the other thing I like too, and I don't think I'd ever picked up on this, is like when she's listing all of the generals, she's like, I know lots of generals. Mm. And so she's just listing the people that she's fucked. Like, she's a liberated fucker, like literally.
Or an officer who's a masseur. So I also
like a former masseur.
He's a good lover, and which insinuates that this guy sucks, which is all I saw this episode, is how much this one guy sucks.
Which is accurate,
I mean, that's
it's a lot of the
show.
He's good with his lips. Anyway.
I think he's good with his penis. I think he's bad with his lips and good with his penis.
Good.
I would assume he's mediocre with his penis, but we'll find out in another episode.
I'm sure we'll find out by the end of season 3.
Are you ready for some must-have facts?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, drink that water, Kurt.
Drink that water. Glug, glug, glug. So about 25.7 million people watched this season of MASH.
Okay. That's so crazy.
Yeah, welcome to the monoculture.
Yeah.
It was number 4 for the season, the number 4 most watched show. So the top 5 shows
the
of
fourth?
The Yeah. Fourth
most
at that
popular
number.
Yeah. Show had 25 million people watching it. Wow.
Number 5 was Hawaii Five-0. 4 was MASH. 3 was Sanford and Son. 2 was The Waltons.
Whoa.
And number 1 was, of course, All in the Family.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is the legendary TV season. This is maybe the most important lineup of television of all time. The CBS Saturday Night lineup of the 73-74 TV season was All in the Family, followed by MASH, followed by The Mary Tyler Moore Show, The Bob Newhart Show, and The Carol Burnett Show. Like, on a Saturday night.
Yes, I remember the character that you had said died, who I thought was Colonel Potter. I don't know who it was. He appeared on the Carol Burnett Show. afterwards, and they did a gag, because I remember seeing that gag of him, like,
oh really,
he's in like a life preserver, like in a life raft, and he's like, I'm okay, like,
oh wow.
Yeah,
oh my god.
Being like, well, I know that guy survived because I, you know, could not, because they used to show Carol Burnett on Nick at Night as well.
Yeah.
And
oh so wow, that's so funny.
Like, you know, they might not know he died or he's alive right then, but I'm like, he was fine.
Well, his Carol Burnett show was canon within the MASH contact, right?
Yeah. And I think at the very least your head canon can be that he survived.
Yeah. So like, I can't imagine, sure, like, just that night of, because there's no VCR, like, reruns aren't reliable. So it's just like, you have to stay home on Saturday night and you watch five of the most important shows in TV history back to back. I mean, like must see TV in its heyday still had the shows in between Friends and Seinfeld and ER.
Yeah.
Because like those were very rarely, you know, I love Caroline in the City. I liked Veronica's Closet, but like those aren't
not the same.
Yeah. That's not like MASH is in the hammock spot between All in the Family and Mary Tyler Moore. Like, that's crazy. MASH.
Yeah, you gotta prop up MASH.
Yeah. It's like, just, it is, no. It's just so wild. So this episode was nominated for an Emmy that year, but it lost to the Mary Tyler Moore episode, The Lou and Edie Story, which is, I think it's the beginning of the Lou Grant gets a divorce storyline, which, you know, in 1973, that's a very like progressive topic of like an older couple getting divorced.
Or even just divorce in general.
Just divorce in Jenny's.
Yeah, like even now, if they had that, that would be a big deal. You know?
If a main character is getting a divorce.
Yeah, that would be a big storyline now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to win Annie's for it.
Yeah, it depends how good it is.
You have to be really good.
you're withholding judgment. Your judgment as an Emmy voter is being withheld until.
Yeah, I'll read it.
So on IMDb, 348 MASH heads rated this episode a 7.8 out of 10. Should that be higher or lower? Right on the money.
I think I would vote it a little bit higher, but again, like I haven't watched enough episodes recently to like kind of compare it to like other MASH episodes. I thought I liked it. I would give it at least an 8.
Yeah. What about you, Kirk?
Well, MASH, I can MASH noob. Honestly say this is the best episode of MASH I've ever seen. worst episode of MASH I've ever seen.
Oh, double-edged sword.
So I have to give it.
That's what happens when it's five. Only one.
I have to give it two thumbs up.
Oh wait, how does that? What
not
number
two thumbs
is that?
Sideways.
You know, it's on a scale of 1 to 3.75.
It's like 1.2 knuckles. Yeah. Wait, a thumb only has two knuckles.
I liked it. It made me want to learn more about the characters, and I thought this was a good one to focus on. I get a good idea of everyone else seeing how they react to her as opposed to an episode that might be specific to Hawkeye.
Yeah.
I get a good feel for their characters watching them react. So I did enjoy it. I think an 8's a pretty good vote there.
Yeah. I would say like, this is just my old school, like, cause in Tennessee, well, first of all, Tennessee's grading system was, I've learned, different than apparently everyone else. So anything below like an 83 was a C. Or like an 82 was a C. So when I see 7.8, I'm like, whoa, that's a 78. That's a C. This episode's not a C. This episode's at least a B.
78 would be a C even for
normal people. But like this is like a low C. Like A was 93 to 100, and then anything below 70 was failing.
Damn.
So, yeah, it was like a 7-point scale as opposed to a 10.
Oh wow. My college had a very weird grading scale. It was a 98-point scale.
Wow.
Instead of going to 100, it went to just 98. But then also, A's were not all of the 90s either. They were like, I think 91 or 92 to 98. Actually, it might have even just been 93 to 98.
So weirdly,
there was definitely a class where I got a 90 or a 91, and that was a B+, and I was livid. I was like, unacceptable. If it's 70 to 80 is C, or 70 to 79 is C, 80 to 89 is B, 90 to 100 is an A.
We were not that way. We were like 70 to 77, 77 to 84, 84 to 93, 93 to 100. Like, yeah, we were, it was.
That's so weird.
Yeah. I don't know. That's just and that's how all of Tennessee was. I don't know why. So then when I see a 7.8, I'm like, no, no, no. This is at least like an 8 or an 8.2 or something. Like, it's got to get up there.
Okay.
Who had the must-see performance in this episode?
I mean, probably Julian.
Yeah.
Loretta Swit. You said her name. This
yeah, Loretta Swit. Yeah.
Yeah, I think she was really great. I think she did a decent drunk performance, which are like harder to do than you'd think. I think for the time, it was like a definitely like pretty good one.
Yeah.
I also just really enjoyed getting to watch Alan Alda be Hawkeye again because it had been so long.
Very comforting.
So I had that like nostalgia for it because he's honestly just the fucking best.
Yeah,
he's so great. I'm a huge fan of his. I think the other thing I was going to ask, real quick aside, have either of you seen the MASH movie?
No.
No, but I want to.
I haven't either. Yeah, I haven't either, and that's always been something that
Zoom
like,
party.
People talk about it.
We should do that.
Yeah, we should. That would be fun.
What else do I have? Be great. Kirk, who is your must-see performance?
I mean, it has to go to Houlihan. She's the character of this one, and she gets a good deal of screen time. So yeah, I'm glad they gave her a nice episode like this.
Yeah, I guess
one last little note on that one too is just that it's also very satisfying to see a woman character get to do the funny parts. Because very often, less so for Hot Lips, but still it was part of her character to be like the having no fun. She still got laughs, but it was like never doing like silly stuff.
Yeah.
So
she got to do really silly stuff.
She got to do silly stuff. She got to have like funny, silly lines and not just like kind of the more straight character lines. What about you, Brett?
No, yeah. I mean, it would either be between her or Gary Berghoff for that. for that silly Flash Gordon reference. But honestly, Hot Lips has the most to do, and her drunk acting was a unique kind of drunk acting that I appreciated, especially her in the shower was very funny, very well done.
Yeah, that was
so
funny.
I like seeing her get to strut her stuff. And lastly, must other people see this episode of television? I mean, Kirk, as the first episode of MASH, is this a good first episode of MASH? Other than just starting with the pilot, which people could also do.
Start with the pilot. I mean, I've not even seen it, but I would assume never start with the pilot. Honestly, if you were going to watch your first episode of MASH, I might go with a Hawkeye-centric episode because then you get to see. I mean, I feel like the show is told through his point of view mostly, mm-hmm. where he is the central mm-hmm. character, and then this would be a very good secondary episode to see.
Yeah. As I recall, and I don't know this for sure, but as I recall, I think MASH is known as having a pretty good pilot.
Yeah.
And maybe because it was coming from like the movie, it's not quite as dangerous of like a general like.
Yeah, there's some pre-awareness pilot, there. You
know? Yeah. But that's a good question. I'm gonna have to go watch the pilot and see how.
I kind of want to watch the pilot and see.
Yeah.
Loving it.
I think
this is a fun episode to watch. It's Emmy, it's got Emmy cred also, if for the TV history thing of it being written by Linda Bloodworth and Mary-Kate Place is also a very fascinating thing. I don't even know how many episodes of MASH they wrote, like if this was just a like special, like Linda Bloodworth is coming
it might have been it might have been her first like one of her very early writing jobs.
I should have
given like her age
that I should have I looked up. Great.
I love Linda Bloodworth Thompson.
She was 24 when she wrote this. She was born in 47, 57, 67.
I'm old.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
What is?
Oh, no, our careers can still happen.
Yeah, she wrote 5 episodes of MASH. Wrote an episode of Paper Moon, an episode of Paul Sandin, Friends and Lovers, which I talked about a couple weeks ago, but not the whole episode. I just mentioned it. And she wrote an episode of Rhoda as well, but that was after she started on MASH. She worked hard.
There was a Paper Moon TV show?
Paper Moon. Let's see. What is this? Clicking on it.
Yeah, I'm going to assume
Paper Moon. It lasted 13 episodes.
Wow.
Starring Christopher Connolly and Jodie Foster.
Wow.
Holy shit.
The Adventures of Moses Prey.
TV show of Paper Moon.
A con artist selling Bibles to credulous widows, and Addie Loggins, a young girl, as they travel the roads of America during the time of the Great Depression in the 1930s. It was a 30-minute comedy.
I'm laughing all right. No, that's,
that is
I'm kind of
so
amazed.
Weird.
Foster in it too. Like yeah. She was already.
I mean, that would have been that the right age.
She's
shot you know.
Your child actress years.
But so that's wild. So. I can't believe they made a TV show. That
she was 12.
Of all the things. See, people like made like, oh, there's no only one plot. People keep making the same movies over and over again. That the same thing happened back
yes.
then, guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If a thing was popular, they would make a TV show out of it.
I wrote
they would
that
make
about
a movie
like,
again. Like
how the Brady Bunch
Star is Born.
Yeah, the Brady Bunch has done what everyone's complaining about sitcoms doing now is like, no, the Brady Bunch never died. Like they kept canceling yeah. it, and then it would come back in a revival as the Brady Brides, and then it would get canceled. Then it would come back as a TV movie. Then it would get stopped, and then yeah. it would come back as an hour-long drama called The Bradys, which I should definitely do on this podcast because it is
that
fully
sounds
nuts.
Insane.
Marsha becomes an alcoholic. Bobby gets paralyzed.
What?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It
what?
Is nuts. It's nuts. And
no
for the first
real.
Half of it, I think they still use a laugh track, even though it's an hour long drama that shot single cam on a soundstage.
Wow,
and they still, I think, have like weird moments of like laugh track because they were like, we don't know how to deal with this. But it's very much a drama. It's great. Oh, yeah, I need to do that.
That's like if instead of Joey after Friends being a sitcom, they turned it into like a spinoff of ER.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like,
and just had like Joey Tribbiani as like not an actor playing a doctor. He just decided to become a doctor.
Yeah, I'm a doctor now and it's fine.
That's
so weird.
So where can people
yeah, exactly.
find y'all on the internet to talk to you about other preposterous TV show spinoffs that should definitely happen? Revivals.
Well,
Kurt, you go first because I keep talking.
Okay. I am, you can find me on Twitter. I am Kirk Says, SAYS. And yeah, I'll talk about TV with you. I like some TV, and if I haven't seen it, then I'll check it out.
Hurrah!
Nice. You can tweet me at K Healy Wu, K H E A L Y W U. I almost said it gmail.com, which is not my Twitter handle. feel free to tweet me. Don't tell my dad about it though. I don't want my dad to find out about Twitter.
Oh God!
Because I had to send him a link. Mandy Patinkin has been doing like his son has been like recording videos of his parents like trying to answer like pop culture questions, and Mandy Patinkin is like being exactly what you would think Mandy Patinkin was. And there was one where he was asking him about asking his dad and Mandy and his mom about like internet like IRL and like LMAO, and his parents like they were trying to like desperately to guess what they stood for and failing miserably almost every time, and it was adorable and hilarious, and I had to send it to my parents.
That's gonna
and
be a creepy
was,
show before
I, they
long
had to watch it. Yeah, and my dad was like, well, so that's what this Twitter is, oh what's that about, and I was like nothing,
no,
like,
it's,
no. I,
it's over no Twitter it costs $80 to join
that is what I should have said. He's like, I saw Chris Evans talking about Stanley Tucci, and I was like, oh no.
Please
like,
don't
hashtag Massachusetts Chris Evans. Almost as big a deal as John Krasinski with his Good News Network.
Oh god. Oh boy. Anyway, well, that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guests Katie Healy-Wersberg and Kirk D'Amato for dropping by talking about MASH with me. Next time on the show, I don't know what I'm going to be discussing because I haven't figured it out yet because I'm recording this a little bit in the future. So, hey, you know what? No editing, so you'll just have to figure it out when the episode drops. Until then, I want to hear from all of y'all. Follow Must Have Seen TV on Twitter and Instagram. Let's talk about sitcoms. And please rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts. That's always helpful. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. Read the words that are right at Decider.com. Thanks to Acast for hosting this Mama Jamma. Thanks to y'all for listening, and I'll see you next time on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.